It's Something for Nothing, the Rush Fan Cast, Jerry and Steve with you. Jared, today on my car ride home from work, I was listening to Presto.
Were you really?
I was, and it was awesome.
You know, the other day, I was picking up my daughter, and I had WDHA on, the radio, and it was Halloween.
Yeah.
And Terry Carr, our friend Terry Carr, played Ghost of a Chance for Halloween.
Wow. Did she play Witch Hunt, too?
I was only listening for like 5 minutes in the drive, but I was like, Ghost of a Chance.
Nice.
That's a deep cut.
You know Terry, she's a big Rush fan.
Yeah.
But what I wanted to say about Presto is I was listening to the version that is on this box set, Jer, the studio albums 1989 to 2007, and it's remastered and it sounds amazing.
Oh, really?
So I would suggest, if you're a Rush fan and you don't have this collection, to get it because it sounds really, really good.
So what albums are on it?
Everything from Presto to Snakes and Arrows.
Oh.
Yeah. And the remastered versions, I believe, of Presto and Roll the Bones. And also the remaster of Vapor Trails is on here.
Oh, that's cool.
So if you don't have that, you get the Vapor Trails remaster too. It's very cool.
Nice.
Anyway, you can find us on Twitter. We are at Rush Fancast. Instagram, find us at The Rushcast. Email Jerry, therushcast@gmail.com. The bass intro and outro, that's Lex. I'm a little sick. I don't know if you can tell, Jer. So you better read that email quick.
I couldn't tell, Steve. Your voice sounds as great as usual. But yeah, I do have an email from Joe.
What's up, Joe?
Listener Joe. He's writing in about our episode with Leonie Jane Kennedy.
She was awesome.
Yeah. He says, this episode was truly one of the best ones to date. Leonie is an impeccable musician. I loved her cover of Tears. It's so haunting. I must say, it's better than the Rush version on 2112.
See? See? I'm not the only one who says stuff like that.
Right. I'm going to get some emails on this email. I've always enjoyed the song myself, but now I love it even more. I cannot wait for the New World Woman album to come out next March. She should think about doing a collaborative album with Jacob Moon.
That would be cool.
It would be fantastic. I think Steve would think so too. I don't know why he singled you out between the two of us, but there you go. Since Rush has left us along with the passing of Neil, your podcast has certainly filled the Rush void for your listeners. What is even more interesting is the expansive library of cover songs that I have heard because of your podcast. I can't wait for your next covers episode. Thanks for all you do. Regards, Joe.
Awesome, Joe. Thanks so much for that email. We really appreciate it. And I think it's just because I'm more apt to think that these covers are better than the Rush versions than you are.
That's true.
The reason that he singled me out.
Yeah, that's true. Why is that, Steve?
I don't know. Let me ask you this.
Okay.
If you asked Getty and Alex, is Leonie's version of Tears better than the version on 2112, what do you think they would say?
Well, they're very generous people and humble, so I would assume they would say that it is.
I think they would.
But I think they would actually think it is. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I think so, too, because I think they're a little critical of their older work, too.
That's true.
So I think that combined with the fact that it's so great, I think they would think that.
I agree 100%, Steve.
So, Jared, a couple of weeks ago, we went to the A Night for Neil concert in St. Catharines, Ontario. And we were lucky enough to meet the man behind the exceptional blog called The Canadian Music Scene. He has been following Rush for decades. Paul Ballou, welcome to the Rush Fancast.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I'm quite thrilled to be taking part in this. It was a great meeting you guys there too. Yeah.
Absolutely. Thanks for being here. We'd like to start out by asking our guests their Rush origin story, Paul. When did you first hear Rush and how did you become a fan?
I prepared. I did read your email. Yeah.
Actually, has it been that long ago that you had to have notes?
Well, no, I just kind of like, we could go for 20 hours if you let me go. So I had to figure out to condense it down to an hour. So first time I heard Rush was in 1975. I was playing in a band and the guitar player came down and I had a Stampeders album on my turntable and he kind of ceremoniously lifted up and gave her a little toss and put down this album and first song to come on is Anthem. And I kind of went, oh, what the hell is this, right? You know, God bless Stampeders, a very big Canadian band, but nowhere close to Rush. Although they do have a claim to fame with Rush, and that Terry Brown mixed that album that my friend threw on the floor. So even back then, Terry Brown had an influence on music I listened to even before Rush and didn't know it. And yeah, so that was pretty cool. But then it was quite a while later, I lived up in North Bay, which is a 2.5-3 hour drive north of Toronto. And Rush did not come there until October 8th, 1976. However, the good thing about that is that was part of the, after 2112. So I got to see my first show that had, you know, By Tour and Anthem and 2112 and, you know, Lakeside Park. So it just solidified the fact that they are and became my favorite band of all time. You know, and I knew right then that my life was going to be changed because, yeah, they've been part of my life ever since, basically, and always will be, I guess, until the day they say goodbye to me. And yeah, so that was my kind of experience. You know, I was 15 to see my first concert up there. It was like you had the old days where you, as soon as the gates opened up, you just ran, tried to get your best spot in front of the stage. And yeah, I managed to get right in front, a little bit on Alex's side. And, you know, so not only did I love these guys musically, but now to see them live, it just, wow, you know, By Tour and the Snow Dog, when Alex is using his volume pedal to, you know, all that stuff and the blue lights. It was just, you know, I just realized, wow, that these guys are as good as I thought. And yeah, that became a major changing point in my life, a good changing point, and been a Rush fan ever since.
So when you were in those bands, were you in the same scene maybe when Rush was in? Did you cross paths at all back then?
Oh, no, we weren't that big. Well, we just started. We were in North Bay. But my dad was in the military, and the guitar player, his dad was my dad's boss, and they moved the whole division out to Winnipeg. And we met my best friend out there and played bass and could sing. And that's when we got more heavy into the Rush style music and all that stuff. But we did play in front of some pretty big audiences, and we played back then. Every bar, every motel had a bar in it in Winnipeg. So we played usually consistently from Tuesday, Saturday, and sometimes even Mondays. So we were playing a lot, you know, I'd always try to see how many Rush songs we could squeeze in there. We had to play all the other standards everybody else wanted to hear, but we managed to squeeze some Rush songs in there. And I also played with the Winnipeg Youth Orchestra. And when we were in session, I would actually bring all the tubular bells and glockenspiel and temple blocks and wind chimes out on the road of us when we were playing, right? So much to the chagrin of my roadie back then, I guess. And he enjoyed it. I mean, he'd always, you know, I'd let him have free rein to bring friends in and check it all out. And I went down to Fort Wayne, Indiana, and got a kit just like Neil's, because we were making good money. You know, back then we were doing quite well. And I went down, but I wanted Tama. So I got his sack kit that basically became his Farewell to Kings kit, but I got it before him. That's my claim to fame. But he got it fiber fabbed and everything else. I didn't do that, obviously. But so actually I went down. I really liked Tama because he had just come up with Memor Lock. So you have a little metal piece you can lock in when it's on the stand. You take the toms off, you go to put them back on, they go in the exact same spot every time, mm-hmm. Right? And he probably talked to Lauren, who was saying the best invention ever for drums. And yeah, so that was pretty cool. So, you know, but we played a lot of other stuff, and, you know, because of like Sega, you know, that was another band open for Max Webster. We love Max Webster. There's a band called Street Heart, and we used to open up for them, or they'd open up for us, depending on what venue we're at. And so, yeah, we were playing all the time and getting to know some bands that went on to get pretty big, right? So Street Heart broke up and became Loverboy. And you probably heard of Loverboy. Oh, and, yeah, that's so Street Heart. To me, my friends were the best band out there, and technically, music-wise, were fantastic, but they never made it anywhere. Then they go form Loverboy. they make it huge, right? So, but I've still kept in touch with Matt Burnett and Spider from the band, and still talk to him. And, you know, good guys, good people. So that's my big experience.
So how did your career progress, Paul, from being in bands to music journalism?
Well, this is an interesting thing, too, because this was just a total fluke. I'm in IT, and I was Y2K, making good money doing that. And then I realized, the mainframes are going to go the way of the dodo bird. So I better learn how to do a website. So I started a website, and I said, well, what do I know that people might be interested in? Hey, music, right? So that's how the Canadian music scene got born. And I just started covering a lot of small, you know, like very local award shows and festivals, and just didn't rock the boat. And, you know, I write nice articles. I started taking a lot of pictures, started getting more and more media passes. And then some of the girls that were, well, I shouldn't say girls, some of the people I know that moved on to bigger PR companies and so on. So I started getting to bigger and bigger and bigger events until, you know, I started getting Live Aid. I covered Live Aid. I covered Virgin Music Festival, SARSTOCK. I was at SARSTOCK, thank God, because they get us journalists in and out, no problem in the back. I wouldn't have had to try to get through that crowd if my life depended on it. It just kind of, right? Yeah. And that was surreal to look out there, you know, and you get the first three songs of every band. So I'm out there, and Rush took a little break. I'm looking over, and everywhere you look, there was people. It was just insane. It was like, I think they eventually say 600,000 people, and they're just going, wow, you know, it's that's yeah. crazy. Yeah. So, and then I moved up to what's equivalent of the Grammy Awards is Juno Awards. Mm-hmm. And I've been covering the Juno Awards for years and years and years. And that's where you really get your name out, you know, because it moves the city to city, but there's only a few of us that are there every year. So I got to know a lot of the bands. And it got, you know, and they come backstage with their Juno Awards, and I take pictures of them. I get them to do funny things. And then, of course, eventually we all go celebrate the awards that they won. So, you know, you're drinking with these bands until the wee hours of the day and celebrating with them, and sometimes traveling back to the city, you know, my hometown, they'd be on the plane. And so that just kind of grew, you know, until eventually, yeah, I started doing the Canada Walk of Fame, which is not even just musicians. It started like, you know, I've met Ryan Reynolds, I've met Jason Priestley, I've met, you know, all these people because they're just Canadians that do well around the world and they get awarded a star in the Canada Walk of Fame. And that's basically how I came out. I don't know, I even consider myself a journalist, to be honest, but I guess I do because I do interview bands, you know, and I take pictures of them, I cover the concerts. I've had some great interviews. I don't know if the band Triumph, have you ever heard of them?
Oh, of course.
Yeah, Rick and I are good friends, so I sat in Studio One at Metalworks and interviewed Rick, and I guess I did such a good job because he was expecting like an hour. 2.5 hours later, he goes, holy shit, the wife's going to kill me. We better wrap this up. But, you know, don't know him over the years. I just kind of knew what questions to ask him and what, you know, and then also he had that new album come out with Resolution 9, the new band. And so then I got into that. So yeah, I guess maybe I'm a journalist. Eh? I don't know.
You definitely are a journalist.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you then. That's cool. That sounds good. I was just so happy that, you know, I went the right route. I didn't piss off anybody. And every time I applied for a media pass to go to any of these events, I got them, right? And that's the key thing, right? Oh, like, I don't know how many award shows I've covered with Rush, right? And that's how I got to know the guys really well. You know, I go to the Governor General Performing Arts Award. Well, I was the only person outside of the, what do you call it, the parliamentary press that had a pass to go in their Governor General's house. And so I got these great pictures. The guys came right over when they got their awards. They're standing in front of me. Neil even looked. I could see him whisper over to Alice. Goes, here's that freaking guy again. And him and Alex and Getty. And, you know, just thrills like that. And Neil actually used a couple of my pictures from that event in his book and on his website, right? So when you get that, it's a pretty big thrill. You know, I didn't even know. I just told Anthem, well, SRO management, any pictures I ever had that they wanted to use, just go ahead. Don't even ask. And a little bit else, me, I got a call from, oh my God, I can't even remember what her name was. And she says, well, you're Rush Royalty. I go, what do you mean? Well, you're in Neil's book. You're on his website and all that stuff. I was going to go, oh, and I didn't even know, right? So that was pretty cool. Little events like that are pretty cool. And just Alex. I mean, I was on the board of directors for the Board of Trade of Toronto and had this huge, huge golf tournament. I mean, it was sponsored by one of the big investment companies. And I mean, they had all the top PGA guys. They had some real cool stars. And then it just happened to be one card comes up to the one hole I'm standing on. And there's Alex. I go, oh, huh. Hey, Alex, how's it going? So I just started talking to him a bit. And then there's a young kid was just standing there too shy to talk to Alex. And he wanted Alex to sign something. And I said, hey, remind me, get this little guy. And Alex has always been like that ever since I've known him. Like, he'll stop. Whatever, and if it's a kid, a young kid, a fan wants something, he'll sign it, right? He's been fantastic for that. I can go on about how many times I've seen him just, you know, an after party in Toronto in the Molson Amphitheater, and there's two guys in wheelchairs, and they can't get up where Alex is, and Alex is chatting away, even with some good looking women. And of course, women always like talking to Alex. And I came over and I see him almost get mad, but I said, Alex, I pointed down to the guys in the wheelchairs and he stopped. Went right down there. I got his picture taken with them and all that stuff and signed a bunch of stuff for him. That's the way he is from how I know him. And, you know, so I've been thrilled to, you know, do share experiences with that, you know, and I've golfed with him a couple of times myself in charity tournaments. So that's pretty cool. And he's very serious. Yeah. He's not the fun loving Alex when you're golfing. Let me tell you that. Yeah. You better play well. And he better be taking it serious, or he probably won't be playing golf with Alex ever again. Yeah, so, yeah. Unfortunately, I love golfing too, so it I had no problem with that. And yeah, it was just yeah, little experiences like that that just kind of like, you know, make your rush life, make my life. Period. Just pretty good, right?
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about Rush and their place in Canadian music. So, how would you characterize, obviously, their spot in the history of Canadian rock music?
Well, I'm being a little biased, but I am. Yeah, to me, Canadian music history is Rush. I'm just kidding. You know, but most of us have that attitude. But definitely a major influence. I mean, you know, there's a lot of great bands that come out of Canada, and I had that written down. You know, like Alanis Morissette, Shania Twain, Bryan Adams. I mean, the huge stars have come through, but they're right up there. They're always considered when you hear anything up here about the top 50 bands or whatever, and they're always in the list. They're the top guitarists or top drummer, all that stuff. They always make it in, if not at the very top, usually at least in the top 10 in any polls up here in Canada. So I think they're really, really well respected, and they should be, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I got interviewed by a CBC when they got inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That's our big, it's like NBC or something, like our it's one of our big TV networks. Mm-hmm. And I've got a kit like Neil, so I'm down there racking away on the kit, playing away while the guy's, you know, talking to me. And he sits there and he goes, I can't remember what it was. Damn it, I had it in my head a second ago. Anyway, I know what it was. I told him, way back in 1975 when I first heard him, I knew that one day they would always be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And the guy goes, yeah, you heard it from Paul. He predicted it how many years ago? Yeah, so that felt pretty good too.
You're like one of the few people, though, who I guess was certain that they'd get into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame because it took a long time.
It took a long time. You know, I'm good friends with Donna Helper, and I know she was doing everything she could to try to get it out there. And, you know, she had like missions for me to go on to try to get a hold of people up here. I would definitely go and do it, right? And, I mean, you know, but it was funny. One time even, you know, it might have been one of the golf tournaments of Alex. He honestly just said, he goes, we don't really care. He says, we got so many awards and this and that and this and that. And it wasn't to be a slight to the fans. It was just that he really says, oh, we don't need another award, right? But I was at the after party in L.A. after they got their award. And I was down there, you know, and Getty and them were mingling around. And Getty actually came in, heartfeltly said that. He goes, we didn't realize how much it meant to the fans. He was talking, he was being interviewed by somebody else, but I was standing right there, and he goes, we didn't realize how much it meant to the fans. Now we do. And he goes, so this is just as much for them. You know, it makes us happy to have it now because of the fans, right? So, yeah. And I could tell that was heartfelt. So that was pretty cool to hear that. Yeah, you know, because the longest time, you know, how many awards have they got? They got awards coming out through Yin Yang, right? So they really didn't feel it was that important until after they got there. And that night, I don't know, were you there that night?
Yes, we were both there, yeah.
The crowd went freaking bananas, right? Yeah. Absolutely insane. I mean, it started with yelling at Jan Wiener, whatever his name is. And called Wiener. I think it's something else.
Everybody booed him when he stepped out on stage.
And it was spontaneous. And there wasn't like one guy started. It was almost spontaneous, right?
Right.
And it went on for like 5 minutes. And and then when they came out, you know, and it didn't even have to say who they were. And just from Toronto, right?
Right.
The place exploded.
Yeah. So I think right then and there, they realized how important it was for the fans, you know, that their band is that good and had to be recognized, you know, in one of the most, you know, valued places for rock and roll. Right. So, yeah. So it's pretty cool. That was a great night.
Yeah. You weren't surprised by Alex's speech, I bet.
I have to say I was. Yeah. Although I stole it at the night for Neil.
That's right.
I had to be done, right? I came out and I just brought out a piece of paper, right? Well, you guys were there. And I just went blah, 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 blah. Oh, wrong paper, and put it in my pocket and did my real speech. But Yeah, I mean, that's a classic. Yeah, that would go down in history. People will remember that forever, right?
Right. Yeah, because other people in the audience, you know, we were up top, but he started out with the blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And then he kept going and we're like, this is going to be his entire speech. All of us were like, this is crazy. And he starts acting out like being.
Well, I'm
going
to say his expressions like, too, right? Like, he was like, yeah, yeah. And then blah, blah.
He pantomimed a whole story about how they got there. It was great.
Yeah. Even doing his hair, you know, doing his hair and getting there, right. Thinking all this stuff. Yeah. Yeah. That was fantastic. That was just an unbelievable day. And it was really weird. I was humming and hawing about going down there. And then last minute I just went down and, I can't remember. Probably Peggy got me a ticket. Like, so I was down where the tables were, just above the tables. But I got in a weird side. It's like when the performers and that were honoring all the people, when they're finished, they came out and sat beside me. So I ended up having all these musicians and all that coming off the stage from playing, sitting beside me. But you know what? I just say it's a horseshoe. I mean, I get stuff like that all the time. I don't know why and how it happens, but I mean, shit like that happens to me all the time. I just, oh, here's everybody that's performing tonight coming and sitting beside me, right? It's like, just Peggy got me a ticket at the last minute, but yeah. And that night to Dave Grohl, I got to meet Dave, a wonderful guy, and Taylor Hawkins, rest in peace. And God, they were amazing. Like, they were just talking to me like I've known them all my life. I mean, I was just a little guy sitting there, right? And these guys, like, arguably still are at the top of the world in the music business, right? And like, wow, it was just so cool, right? To this, I talked to Dave for like 40 minutes, and I don't know if I figured Dave had to know Alex's mom, but he says I've never met her, and she was over there, so I introduced him to Alex's mom, and to this day, I still think he was just pulling my leg, but I mean, you know, it was pretty cool. Like, I could just say, "Hey, Dave, here's Alex's mom," and that's like that's pretty cool. Yeah, but that was a lot of fun.
You're like the Forrest Gump of Rush, Paul. Every major event of Rush's life, you're there.
Yeah, yeah. I just happen to look in the background. There I am. Yes,
oh, my right? God. That's so funny.
You know, on your website, I saw the pictures of the opening of Lee Lifeson Art Park in Toronto. Yeah. I'm guessing you were there too, right?
Well, I was the only one that had a media pass besides the city of North York where it is. Yeah, so yeah, I was there. Yeah.
That's a beautiful place.
Yeah, it was pissing rain too, so it was great. I would get to go under the tent and take a lot of pictures though, and then some of the pictures I took of the fans were all like my friends, and there's Bev, the Rush Girl, and Chill, and a bunch of them, and Donald Gaziola's in there and all that stuff, and I'm just laughing. It was a great time again up there, right? And the whole family was there. And, that was just another funny event, because something about Getty was saying that was the first spot that Alex took him to get him high, right? Alex looks around at his mom and goes, "You can't see that. Our moms are sitting right back there, right?" Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, I mean, there's still, even at this age, they just, these little jokes, "Oh, I can't see that. My mom's there," right? Yeah, his sister and all that. I became really good friends with his sister, Sally. So I don't know if you know all the fan conventions. There was RushCon. Mm-hmm, and yeah. RushCon 2, he sent his mom and Sally out to see what it was. Are we all crazy or is it a legitimate type of event, which of course it is. And I just hung around with them all day because I was sponsored to RushCon back then, and they were busy, the crew, and I had the time to spend with them. Sally and I are still really good friends, and it's just funny how things work out like that, right? It's just interesting. Yeah. Yeah.
So is this the RushCon? Because there's so many of them, but it's the one that's just called
RushCon. This is the real RushCon. Yeah.
Yeah.
I pretty well go to all of them. I've been to a couple of UConn's, a Rush family reunion, but the main one I do now is Rush Fest Scotland. I think you met Steve Brown over there, right?
Yeah, we did.
So he started it, and I pretty well go over every year, and I bring guests over or interview guests. And next year we're bringing, and this, for everybody's listening, you want to come over to Rush Fest Scotland next year, because we have the Peart family. We have Nancy and Judy, and we're working on Danny, and we have Terry Brown coming over, and Hugh Symes. So The Friday night is me being talkative like I can be, I guess, and I'll be interviewing all those guys, the special guests. And then also they put me to work. It's anybody that's there gets it's a meet and greet. You pay for extra for this one. And I'll put my camera up and my tripod and my lighting, and I'll be taking pictures of everybody who's a celebrity. They put me to work when I go over there, I tell you. Yeah. I wouldn't miss it. Scotland is fantastic. I get a car and I drive all around Scotland and haven't killed anybody or myself yet. And and even Terry trusts me when we go over, right? Because he hasn't been over there for years. So we go there and rent a car, and I'll do the driving. So it's a pretty nice compliment, the fact that he doesn't like put on an extra seatbelt and a crash helmet. Like yeah.
So is there a big difference, would you say, between North American Rush fans and European Rush fans?
It's very interesting. I mean, like one of the key things for all the Rush fan conventions that I've always believed in and helped support it is you get stuff and you raise money for charities. Mm-hmm. Now, the funny thing over here is like RushCon, you know, they're very picky. Everything's got to be signed or it's got to be signed by all three guys, stuff like that. I brought over a poster, a Clockwork Angels poster signed by all three guys. And these guys had spent more on getting some engraved McCallan glasses and stuff like that. And this homemade stuff that people bring in, that's money. They spend a fortune on stuff, but over here, everything was more like signed stuff. Everything had to be, you know, assigned and stuff like that. We're over there. They don't even care. They enjoy it. They like it, but they'll spend money definitely to support charities. So I found that a big difference. Just the overall way too, right? They did older songs. I mean, they're just like here, like we, you know, but it's just, it's a different atmosphere over there. It's just, yeah. I mean, well, we had a lot of fun at RushCon too, but I think even during the day when you got the tribute band playing, the crowd's all, you know, singing along and having a great time with it. Right. So, but I'd say definitely it's slightly different. Maybe it's just because of the environment, you know, it's a totally, we get a lot of Europeans over too, right?
Yeah.
They come over from the mainland. So, or whatever they call it. Yeah. So, but it's just fun. We just have a great time. And the key thing we could do is any special guests we bring over, we get them to come over early and I take them all around Scotland, right? So they can see it. It's a beautiful country. Steve Bruin lives up near Glenfinnan, which is where the bridge for Harry Potter is. I don't know, remember the train? Bridge with the big arches? Yeah, that's real. It's right up. Steve lives 5 miles away from him, right? So I always take people up there to get a little highlight there. Then we go to Erisag, and that's where he lives. It's 160 people, maybe. Yeah, but it's beautiful. It's right on this beautiful country, and there's a little bar. We go in there, and we'll sing, you know, all sorts of different songs, get the bar going. It's just so classic that you just don't see that really here, right?
Yeah.
It's just so like, almost like you think, I'm going to go in this little bar and there's going to be locals singing and playing Scottish music and all that stuff. And that's what it's like. It's just really cool. Yeah.
We have to get out there this year, Jar, don't you think?
Really?
Yeah. You got an open invite. You can do a live podcast from Rush for Scotland.
I was just going to say, if you're going to drive us around, I guess we're going. That'd be great.
Yeah. You got to let us know that we got a big group. So we have one guy, Sandy, really nice guy. We rent like about a 9-person Mercedes people transport thing, right? And but this year I get to just be a guest. I don't have to drive because drinking and driving is very serious over there. Maybe one beer and be questionable. So, you know, it wasn't as fun as it usually is when I was driving everybody around because having one beer, not in my vocabulary. It's and what do you mean I can't have a scotch, right? So but yeah, we got a guy that's really keen and hopefully we'll be driving this all around and it's a good time. Like we go to Loch Ness, you know, you have enough taste of the single malt, you go swimming with Nessie. I've done that before. Yeah, that's my claim to fame. I've swam with Nessie. I stick into it. It was probably just a rock, but you know, after about 20 drams of single malt scotch, it looked like Nessie, right? So there we go. Yeah.
So do you think that maybe some of the enthusiasm the European Rush fans have is because Rush didn't play much in Europe?
That's a great question. That's a really good question. I honestly don't know how to answer that one. Yeah, Rush didn't come up as often as they would have liked them to, but... they seem to, you know, find places to go, like the European Yukon. Like they get a good crowds out to that too. I think they're desperately looking for places like that to live the Rush, you know, still like celebrate Rush, right? So I would imagine that some of it is, you know, it leans towards the fact that the guys didn't play there as often as they would have liked them to play.
Because we here in North America are kind of.
Geez, Toronto? Yeah. Yeah. What do you want me to say there?
We're spoiled. Is that what you're trying to say?
I was trying to say that's exactly what we were a little spoiled because we knew that they were going to come around. And when they came around, you know, the East Coast, they played 3 or 4 places you could go see them easily.
Yeah. I mean, that was definitely after Neil, the unfortunate thing with Neil's family, you know, and they started touring again. And it was interesting. I went to a couple shows. I just decided after that, every tour after that, I'm going to at least 10 shows, 12 shows, right?
Wow.
And I just started doing that. in 2004, I think it was, the R30. I went over to UK and I did all the shows in the UK. I went over to Italy. I went over to Germany. And yeah, you know, I decided I was going to do that. No, what I would never trade it. That was one of the highlights of my life for sure. It's just touring them with along with them basically, and just seeing them all. Right. It was just, and of course, that tour, there was two shows in Wembley, and the second show was September 9th, which is my birthday. And I mentioned Peggy again. Hey, Peggy Ciccone, thank you. Yeah. And she got me, unbeknownst to me, just told me to go to the roll call, and I went, and she had me a ticket front row center for that show. So, yeah.
Wow.
And never asked for it. That's just the way she is. Just a wonderful person. And yeah, a big beam was going across my face that night. I couldn't do any wrong, right? Yeah. Except for Neil screwed up in one song in Dreamline, where he starts doing a roll. He came in early. He started building it up, and then he just kind of calmed it down, and Geddy kind of let him go, and then he came back and did it. It's the first time I think I've ever heard an error live with Neil. Yeah, yeah.
So what about Rush's final show, Paul? Were you at that one as well?
Oh, yeah, I was there.
Thoughts on that night?
I was at Irvine, and was at the Forum, right? And I was with a couple guys. There's a band called The Tiles. I don't know if you ever heard of them. Mm-mm. And Chris Herron, and he works a lot with like Dream Theater guys and all that stuff. And same with him and his brother. And it was just, yeah, really weird. You know, when it was over, when Neil kind of was taking pictures from the guys, you know, and then came out to the front and with the guys, I said, whoop, this is it. And when they left the stage, I think I just stood there for like 15 minutes. I won't admit I was crying, but I probably was crying. Yeah. And the next day we had a tour of LA with RushCon, and man, I just, anything would trigger me off. I just be thinking about this and pretty well crying the whole day. Right. So, but it was sad. It was like, you know, I'm happy there. Would I have been devastated if I missed it? Yeah. Big time after being a fan since 75, but you know, it was just, but you know what? They don't owe us anything. You know, I look at it now. Yeah, look what they provided for us over the years, you know, and I think for me, it was like Dreamline. You're only immortal for a limited time. And I thought I was pretty well immortal when Rush was still going. And then all of a sudden they weren't going. I already felt it, right? I went, oh my God, you know, you always knew there was going to be a new record followed by a tour, and both were going to be spectacular. And all of a sudden it wasn't happening anymore, right? Yeah.
Now you also done some interviews with people who, you know, the crew members for Rush over the years. Can you tell us a little bit about how those came about?
That was one of the highlights. I don't know why. I've known Howard for a long time now, Howard Ungerleiter, and I got to know Lauren Wheaton after a while, and I just realized how much work those guys do on a day, you know, the show is going to be played. I said, somebody should know that. You know what I mean? And that's really, really how I felt. I said, somebody should know that. So I went to Peggy. Hey, Peggy. Hi. You'll notice Peggy's mentioned a lot in this. And I said, I want to interview these guys. And they said, well, who do you have in mind? So I had already talked to Howard and Lauren about it. So Peggy put out a little email to them and said, if you're interested, you know, I approve it. And that's how that kind of started. And then all the rest of the crew found out what I was doing and wanted to be involved too, right? So basically I would start, you know, I'd go there however early I had to be there in the morning. With Lauren, it's like 7 o'clock, or Howard, it's like 7 o'clock, you know, and I spent the whole day just documenting what he did, filming all the lights on the floor, all the lights getting up on the stage, all the lights being hooked up. I mean, everything. And then back testing and the console, and then the speaker guys like Brent Carpenter and Brad Maddox, I spent the day with them and stuff that it was funny. They didn't even know how much wattage they had. So when we worked it out, the Rush show has 360,000 watts of power.
Wow.
Yeah. And the speakers are all brand new. So there's actually a computer system that monitors the power flow, monitors the sound and power flow into each one of the speakers, and it adjusts all show long. It's adjusting itself to just get the best, most optical sound over those speakers. Yeah. I mean, even they have become somewhat high tech, right? And then with Howard, I've been up to his place many times, and he's shown me how to run the whole hog consoles. And the amount that goes into those lights, each light can move different ways and variations. And each one of the ways they can move is what they call like a part of a universe, right? And each light can have like 8, 9, 10 components. And you have to define that for each movement of the light. So when you sit there and you see the show and their lights are moving like kind of mechanically, that's all been programmed in. And it takes a long time to do that. Then they all go to the rest position when they're done, and boop, they come back down. Yeah, that's how Howard says that takes them like 3 or 4 or 5 months to get that all programmed and ready for a tour, right? So, so I learned all that too. And that was pretty fascinating. Not saying I can go on and become a roadie. Not saying I want to. It's a lot of hard work, I guarantee you. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of backbreaking work.
After eight shows, Frenchie, their chef, started cooking meals for me too.
Oh, nice.
So I felt like I was part of the crew then, right? Yeah. You do that. And then, you know, of course, the crew goes and the dinner early. No way. I'm staying for the soundcheck. Sorry. I only have right. 8 chances to see soundcheck. So I stayed for all the soundchecks and all that stuff. And that, you know, that was pretty cool each day. Just, you know, watching the guys come in and almost soundcheck is funny too. One time, like Neil's almost, as soon as the soundcheck's over, he's like, gone. Right. But someday he was just kind of mingling in front of his drum kit. And for years I've had Alex send him a bottle of 12-year-old Macallan Christmas and all that stuff. And he'd send me a book signed, you know, thoughtful and tasteful gifts and all that. It was really cool, right? Just doing that stuff. And he came by and I was standing with Alex, so I guess he felt okay to come by and say, and then Alex introduced me and he goes, "Oh, Paul from the Canadian music scene." Like he knew, like the man was brilliant, right? He just, as soon as he heard my name, he saw the Canadian music scene, right? I went, "Wow, that's pretty impressive," right? And yeah. So another few times, I met him a few times after that. And yeah, I loved the man. Just a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant man. And, you know, he has his quirks about being isolated, but that's his own choice, right? He's just not big with being the limelight, as the quote, right? Mm-hmm. But when you meet him, especially meet him through one of the band members, he was so friendly. He was just, you know, and he had big mitts. Man, oh man, he shakes your hand and it's like, holy crap. Yeah, he's big. He's a big man. Yeah.
So put us in the room when you're listening to Rush's soundcheck. What is that like?
Oh, fantastic. And a couple of times I actually went with Brad Maddox, and what he does is he, like, there's nobody there, right? I mean, the crew has all set everything up, the lights, it's just Howard, there's the sound guys, and Brad Maddox has this cool device, and he can walk around the whole arena, and the device measures the sound quality of where it is, and he can sit there and remotely adjust the sound, you know, from wherever he's standing in the arena. That just blew me away. I said, Christ, what the technology they have on that, right? So we literally walk around the first level, then up to the second level, and we go key spots, and I just watch him sit there and read the sound quality, and he'd be able to adjust a bit here and there, and that was totally fascinating, and just, it's cool. Like, they come out, and they play a couple songs, you know, and they kind of play it. It's never a whole, like, it's all parts of songs. They never sing the whole song altogether, and then they just... Once the sound guy was happy with that, they would just start jamming, right? They just start playing crap. And I swear one time it was Headlong Flight before it was ever released, right? Because now that I remember it, when I go, bah, 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 and I was going, oh, this is a great sounding song. And I don't do it justice, obviously. But yeah, and later on, I said, yeah, that was it. And Howard confirmed where we was. Yeah, that was Headlong Flight, the one that you really liked a lot. I said, cool. Yeah, so that was... You know, that's the inner sanctum. Like you don't see people there. It was me and a few other people. So that was a privilege, a huge privilege. And like I say, guys, you come to dinner? I go, no, oh, I'll see you later. There's no way I'm missing my chance to sit there and see soundcheck, right? So yeah. So that, another great experience.
So also on your blog, I noticed pictures of Rush receiving the highest civilian honor in Canada, the officers of the Order of Canada. Now, were you there for that as well, Paul?
I was there. Those aren't my pictures, but I was there, yeah. At that time, for some reason, they weren't letting the press in. Like so I didn't capture those ones. But because it is a governor general, I don't know if you know the hierarchy. So, you know, we still, you know, the monarchy, the queen, well, the king now, you know, so his representative is the governor general of Canada. Okay. So when we want to do new parliaments or dissolve parliaments and all that stuff, that goes through the governor general. So he's like pretty high ranked in the hierarchy of everything that, you know, in our parliaments and all that stuff. So yeah, he's that award and also the governor general performing arts awards, which I did have a media pass, and you probably saw those pictures and Neil used those. Yeah, as a civilian, that's the two highest you can get. And for the Order of Canada, there's three levels. I think there's just a member, there's an officer, and then a companion. The companion is like, you're pretty well godlike. And an officer is like, not too many people get those. And that's the level that Rush have is an officer of the Order of Canada. Yeah, and you're supposed to wear that. So you see that every time after that, you see their suits and that. There's a little white, looks like a flower, a little tiny pin. that's the pin for order of Canada. You're supposed to wear that forever for the rest of your life.
I'm going to have to take notice of that. I don't think I ever noticed that.
I know if it's an event that it's going to be fairly popular. Alex has told me, he goes, we will make sure we wear it because he knows I'll be looking, right? Hey, where's your little medal thing there, right? So, yeah. So that's basically, as high as you can get. Those are the two highest awards you can get as civilians in Canada. So it's pretty important. That's quite the honor, right, for that. And there was no blah, blah, blah speech at any of those. And they saw they were in tuxedos and everything. Yeah. So how did you guys get into it? Has anybody ever asked that?
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll have to go back and listen to your podcast.
No, well, you can do that, or we could tell the story now real quick. I joined the Columbia Music Club. You got 13 albums for a penny. And one of the albums I got was Moving Pictures.
Oh, nice album for a penny. Yeah.
And that hooked me right from there. And Jerry's story involves me inviting him to a Rush show in 1986.
Right. Yeah. Because I was the only one who could drive. And so I got the ticket.
There we go.
Yeah. And it was just the greatest show I'd ever seen. And then I was just a ridiculous Rush fan.
Rush fan conventions are like that, right? Yeah. We're all basically people that grew up. We loved the band, but didn't have a whole lot of people that we could talk to and associate and had the same love of the band as us, right? So that's why I remember going to the first Rush con. Oh, I can talk about Rush all day if I want, right? We can listen to Rush music as loud as we want. And nobody's going to call me a geek or say, turn it down. Everybody, if anything, people tell you, turn it up, right? So it's just, I found that interesting that there's, yeah, how do you say it? It's just a definitely different group of people that really draw towards the band for sure.
Yeah.
And to me, that's great. I'm glad they weren't number one hits or popular and all that stuff. That I don't think it would have been the same, No offense to John Rutsey. I love John Rutsey. I've got to meet his dad recently. But the band wouldn't have been around now like it did if he was still playing, right? Yeah. I mean, but nothing wrong. He's a great player and all that stuff. But, somebody had to write the lyrics.
Right. So do you have any Rush events coming up?
Nothing right now. The next one will be Rush Fest Scotland over in May 6th over in Scotland, obviously, in Glasgow, as they say. And like I say, a whole bunch of us going over. It's going to be a good time. Do you like Flesh? The guy and the girl from Brazil?
Flesh.
Well, see, yeah, I'm saying that, but Martin himself told me it's Flesh.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
Yeah. No way.
Yeah, because I would... Steve Brown's always saying, it's Flesh, Flesh, it's Flesh, right?
Right.
So, hey, Flesh, how's it going? They go, and Martin goes, it's Flesh. I go, okay, well.
If you say so.
I would trust Martin on that one, right? Yeah, he's probably going to have the right accent, yeah. Yeah, they're going to be coming over next year, too, so that should be pretty cool. And we had Jacob Moon last year, but I didn't go. It was still too close to, unfortunately, the pandemic going pretty crazy, and it's taken this long now for me to even convince Terry to come over. I mean, he's up there, 75, and he's pretty concerned about it, right? So he seems to be a lot more open to it. And Hugh Symes, always a character, so that'd be interesting if we get him over. He was going to grant me an interview one time, but he said I'd have to have a giant light behind him. So it was just a black silhouette. You couldn't see his face. That's the type of way he is, right? Yeah. I was looking at him. Yeah. He goes, oh, no, I'm not joking. I went, oh, okay. Yeah. So he wanted a bright light. So all you would see is just this black silhouette of his face, right? And I went, that was interesting. So, but he's got some great stories. And and Neil's family should be fantastic, right? I mean, they really enjoyed the night for Neil. And I saw them the next morning. And Benny even came up in their little pusher and gave me a little hug and said it couldn't have gone any better. And I had to turn around and not try to cry when you get that compliment from her, right? And Judy and Nancy were beaming ear to ear, right? I mean, they all just said it was couldn't have gone any better. So that's a great compliment. Yeah,
it really was a great night.
Well, it was a lot of work, right from the beginning. I laughed in my statement. I said the world's been trying to prevent us from having this, but we're here. Right? It's let's celebrate Neil, right? And show our love and respect for him, right? Because, it's 2.5 years of all sorts of things, with this going on and that going on, and some people we should never talk to, and some people we hope to talk to. So when it finally came on, it was just oh, wow, this is great, And to see that many people, I mean, when you're up on stage, you get up and holy crap, the place is full, right? It was, That's pretty cool.
So before we wrap up, Paul, what would you say Rush's legacy is? How will they be remembered 50 years from now?
Wow. Well, great musicians and managed to get to a point where they could do what they wanted to do and not have to succumb to the needs of the record labels, right? And I think that is what a lot of the fans respected them for, right? You know, and adjustability, you know, like they didn't always have to put out like Hemispheres and Satan's X One. They could shorten their music and play that way too, but and kind of adjust to the musical style that was kind of the big at the time when they were doing their albums. So I think this is their total musicianship, the fact that they were friends, you know, like there was only three of them and always would only be three of them. Like, I mean, they were true good friends too. There was no, by doing 33, 33, 33, there was no, there was ominosity between the band members. They all got along and, you know, that type of stuff. So to me, it's like legacy is how a band should be. You get along, you're great musicians, you write great music, you entertain your fans and great crew and staff behind you so that like your productions, your shows are always fantastic too, right? So you provided number one for everything, the music, the shows, you know, and to me, that's what the legacy I think of them. They were just always true to who they were, right? That to me means a lot, yeah.
Paul, thanks so much for joining us today on the Rush Fancast and sharing your stories with us. Check out thecanadianmusicscene.com. Paul, thanks so much.
You know what? Oh, you're welcome. I should have never put the.
What's that? It's not the.
Everybody goes Canadian music scene, and I go, "Well, there's a the in front of it, right?" I should have never put it there. Should have never put it there. Yeah. Well, you guys, great. It was a pleasure meeting you guys there. I'm glad you came out for a night for Neil and had a good time. And this has been great. I really enjoyed it. Maybe we'll see you in Scotland next year, right?
Oh, I'd love to go.
Yeah, we'll take you over to the McAllen for.
Yeah.
We always stop in the McAllen or Abelour or both. So I mean. You had to go there and, one quick story on that one. So we went one year and the co-whiskey maker gave us a bit of the private tour and we're in where the barrels and the kegs are. And she goes, this is a 35-year-old one. I went, oh my God, that must be worth like a fortune. She goes, anyone want a taste? My friends aren't quite the single malt guys like I am. So I went, yeah. So she goes over, pulls out the cork, gets his ladle. And you can just reach in. Start drinking this 35-year-old McAllen. Oh, my God, yeah. I mean, that's almost an experience in itself. I mean, the 12, the 18 are cool, but the 35-year-old is just like, yeah, it's insane how good it is, yeah. So that's one of my favorite McAllen stories. Yeah. Anyway, Grace, I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
So, Jer, I say this all the time after we have a guest, but how great was that?
I know, so many stories. I'm telling you. The Forrest Gump of Rush, that is the greatest description.
That's what I was thinking. When he's talking, I'm like, this guy's everywhere. He's Forrest Gump.
I know. The things that he's done and the things that he's seen, I'm very, very jealous of him.
Just amazing. Just amazing. And he plays golf with Alex all the time. How cool is that?
And it was just such a great thing to just meet him.
Yeah.
Randomly at a night for Neil. So interesting. Love talking to him.
And as soon as I met him, I said to myself, we've got to get this guy on.
Right.
Because he was telling me stories 5 minutes after I met him. And I'm thinking, wow.
You're like, hold on to those. I'm not going to talk to you anymore. Just come on the podcast, right? Don't waste the stories.
Exactly. You can find us on Twitter. We're at Rush Fancast. Instagram. Find us at The Rush Cast. Email Jerry. Let him know what you thought of our conversation with Paul Ballou at therushcast@gmail.com. The bass intro and outro. That's Lex, of course. And Jerry's got a great quote to wrap it up, as he always does.
Yeah, it's a lyric from Ghost of a Chance.
Ah, very cool.
I don't believe in the stars or the planets or angels watching from above, but I believe there's a ghost of a chance we can find someone to love and make it last.
Awesome. Thanks, Jer.
All right, see you later.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.